This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
South Africa observes Women's Month, and this is August. Rape continues to haunt the country. We unpack the concerning rise of rape cases and gender-based violence in the country. According to statistics, there are 115 women raped in South Africa every single day. And on the 1st of August 2018, women and gender non-conforming people delivered a memorandum to the government of South Africa saying that gender-based violence had reached levels that were unacceptable. That was in 2018. As recent as was it last month? Heading into this month, we had the rape of 8 women in the area of Krugersdorp. Now, it doesn't really matter who raped. It really, really doesn't matter. And I think for me, the conversation is one that got lost there. Got lost in the essence of the media context, and it got lost in the context of the political space as well. And that's my opinion. The rape of the 8 women got lost in the political space and in the media context as well. And I will tell you why I think that. But I also don't just want to talk about the rape of the 8 women. I want to talk about when we report and discuss rape in this country automatically, I think we lose the essence of the conversation. And I say that because what immediately happened after the 8 women were raped, we began to have a conversation about foreign nationals. And we had a conversation then about sub-conversation under that around Zama Zamas. And we began to shift, and I don't want to say shift the blame, but shift the conversation to the essence of whether Zama Zamas were now legally or undocumented or documented in this country, whether their trade was legal or illegal, and whether they were terrorizing communities in general or not. Those are now the conversations. And when you look at the screens and you watch TV cameras running down particular, you know, areas of the country and going down holes, we are no longer talking about rape. We are talking about Zama Zamas who have now become a menace on particular communities. And isn't that sad that we started off a conversation about rape? We started off a conversation about gender-based violence. And both the political conversations and the media context took it to a place where we no longer are having the conversations about rape and the scourge that it is. We are now having the conversation about Zama Zamas, and on top of that, we're having the conversation about foreign nationals. Isn't that sad? And of course, we need to have those conversations as well. But what sparked the conversations, issue of rape, is no longer being discussed. It's being fought for. Of course, it's being fought for in the quarters that matter. The quarters that matter, and some organizations are fighting so that the conversation still has merit. The conversation still needs to be heard, but they are really fighting hard because other institutions have moved on. And we will have that conversation with, of course, 2 people that are going to be my guest right now in the next second. Well, I'm bringing in Mandisa Kanyilo, Director of Rise Up Against GBV. And of course, Macy Mutaung is a gender activist. And I want to welcome you both to Power 98.7. I want to welcome you both to Power Perspective. Welcome.
Thank you, Denzel, and thank you to your listeners.
Thanks, Denzel, for having us.
Okay, so who was first and who was second? So I understand who I'm talking to. Mandisa, were you first?
Yes, I was.
That's Mandisa. And Macy, welcome then. Macy, you too.
Thanks, Denzel, for having me.
Sure. I don't know if you'd agree with my intro to the conversation about how the issue of rape has unfortunately, and I want to use this particular incident to highlight the broader instances of how conversations get taken over by other aspects of a conversation that become then the conversation, and the issue of then rape is lost in the whole conversation that we actually need. And even though it started with an issue of, you know, brutality and rape in this particular context of what we have seen over the last couple of days, particularly here in Gauteng, we are now dealing with different conversations that have come to the fore. And unfortunately, you know, as society, we have allowed those conversations to overshadow and you know, thunder over the conversation of rape. And we are hardly talking about the rape of the 8 women anymore. The conversation now, when we look at cameras running down particular fields and down holes and showing, you know, various people being arrested and all sorts of things, it's one about zama-zama. So, Mandisa, I want to ask you, how do you keep the conversation of gender-based violence and particularly rape relevant when aspects of other things come about and make it so hard?
Mandisa? Look, I think there's generally fatigue in this country around having any conversation that relates to gender-based violence and femicide.
And it's sad as you say that. It's absolutely sad as you say that.
But it's the truth. It's the truth in the sense that when crime stats are released and we're not seeing any real changes in regards to the numbers, people then have that conversation for a day. It becomes news for a couple of hours, and then we move on as a country. So for us to not want to talk about the rape and rather want to talk about migration issues, want to talk about unemployment, want to talk about youth unemployment, want to talk about crime, instead of really talking about rape, is actually quite normal in how South Africans deflect when issues around sexual violence come through. The one thing that we're not talking about, which actually should be the conversation, is how infrastructure and infrastructural issues and municipalities ignoring infrastructural issues actually leads to sexual violence. The fact that there were abandoned mines and there were areas with high grass is a contributing factor to how that incident took place. And I'm going to put it back to the area that has been the number one sexual violence hotspot in the country over the past 5 years, and that is Lusiki City. Because their issues are also infrastructural. Their issues are around the fact that they have one police station, for example, manning 40 different villages. The police can't get to people in order to respond on time. There's issues around road infrastructure. There's issues around electricity infrastructure.
Lighting.
That prevents police, for example, from responding at night. And so because those infrastructural issues don't get taken care of, we'll see those statistics continue year on year. But we're not having the conversation around municipalities not addressing those issues, around gender activists speaking about how the infrastructure in those areas is actually creating unsafe cities. We're rather having conversations around illegal foreign nationals.
Mandisa, I didn't even think of it that way. A new conversation piece, and it's a massive conversation piece. And, you know, you raised the issue of Lusigisigi, and it's really, really sad. I was born there. The fact that it is deteriorated into the rape capital of the world is not something I look fondly upon as well. Macy, then, your introductory remarks to either what I have said and or what Mandisa has just put on the table then?
I strongly agree with Mandisa, especially in terms of how rape issues are being addressed in our country. I think at the end of the day, it comes as a bomb when it's been put on the table. And lately, the political parties, they come and politicize it and forget about the meaning of it. Look, the issue of Zama Zama. It started as a rape where 8 women were raped. But at the end of the day, when we look at it, more political parties are involved in that. I don't know if either they are campaigning or what, but they convert it and make it their own baby, of which it is not their own baby. It is the government issue whereby they need to rectify the mistakes. Mandisa talked about the service delivered, whereby our people are living in an unsafe environment. The municipality is not doing the way they're supposed to. For instance, now it's winter. Let me shift to that issue of Zamazama, of course. It's winter. Mm. Most of the locations, there's no electricity. That's where a lot of rape cases are starting to emerge. So now go back to issue of the Zamazama of Krugersdorp. It is the worst incident that has ever happened. But what are they doing about it?
Mm.
What are they doing about it? Now I take it as an reaction. Now it's vibrant. Everyone is talking about it. Just give it 2-3 weeks.
Mm.
Everyone will be quiet about it.
Mm.
Everyone will be quiet about it. And what is happening that in the family of the victims?
Mm.
So it's so heartbreaking. We as activists, we are suffering from internal bleeding. I always tell people that even if it's 5-10 years and the incident has happened, but there's a time where something will reflect back and see how our government is treating rape cases. It's heartbreaking. Our hearts are bleeding when we see how our people are taking advantage of our vulnerable people.
Mm.
What is actually needed? They were supposed to go and make sure that the illegal mines have been shut down.
Mm.
Instead of coming and talking about issues of illegal immigrants. There's a long time issue that has been talked about in our country. That is why we've got the people who Operation Dudula. Now they are overtaking Operation Dudula and take that as their own, forgetting about the main issue. People have been raped and brutally so.
Mm. Well, let me stay with you, Macy. I want to ask you this. In light of what you've just said, and Mandisa does talk about fatigue, we have now got to a point where sometimes there is fatigue around some of these conversations, and I said, isn't that a shame? But let me ask you this, and she said we need to be honest about this. Are we a violent country? Do you see us then as one of those countries that's absolutely, you know, can be characterized as a violent country where, you know, issues of, and I'm not even talking about all the other criminal aspects that just plague us, as far as just the rape statistics are concerned, are we just morally and you know, everything else a violent country? How do you perceive when we have to engage as South Africans around this particular issue? One has to then get to the conclusion that things have gone wrong, and we might just be that. We might just be a very, very violent country. And a very, very violent individual, you know, who lives in it.
I think. Let me not say everyone, but we are under siege in terms of gender-based violence as a country.
Mm.
The people of our country are extremely angry, and as to what has made them angry, we don't know.
Mm.
And that behavior has turned our country into a violent country. People now from international countries and international places, they no longer see South Africa as a safe country. We used to be a safe country. I wouldn't mind coming from Pretoria, coming to my location right about 10, 11. But now I wouldn't even go outside my yard to the tuck shop to go and buy something.
Macy, can I interrupt you into something that you said? You said we are under siege. Gender-based violence, absolutely. And you said, you know, our people are extremely angry. But then, in that anger, why do we retaliate in the essence of, and it comes out and manifests itself in spaces of rape? Why then does, if we say we are under siege and extremely angry as a country, why does that manifest in rape particularly? Why doesn't it manifest in all sorts of other things like toying and making our, you know, expressing our issues very differently? Why does it manifest in rape?
The question that you ask me, the question that I ask myself every time, why rape? Why can't people get angry in other instances, but specifically rape? That's a question that we need to ask ourselves every time. Like, even when we come to community dialogue, no one is having that answer. I personally wish to know the answer. Why specifically rape? Mm. Look now, there's a culture of the Zulu culture. Those ladies, they'll walk all over the event without wearing anything, only their traditional attire. But take those kids and bring them to Joburg or to Pretoria. Will they walk the way with their traditional attire? No, everyone will be saying, "Look at that."
That is cultural expression.
Exactly. Mm. So now we are losing every aspect of life. Even our culture, we're losing our culture.
Mm.
And the trust is no more. Even within the family, the trust is no more. Look, even right now, it happens within the family. The uncles are raping us. The uncles are raping their niece.
Mm.
Where is a girl child supposed to be safe in this continent, in this country? There's no safety in our country.
Mandisa,
people are angry.
Mm.
People are angry. My wish is to know what is the main thing that is making this man angry. Maybe if we can start addressing that issue, then we'll know how to deal with the situation itself.
Mandisa, a few issues have been raised since you brought up the first incidents of being fatigued, and there's the conversation and, you know, infrastructural issues that you raised. But a couple of issues have been raised in the meantime as well. Would you like to just home in on some of those as well?
I'd like to home in on the fact that in 2018, we had a gender summit that came out with a summit declaration that led to us having a national strategic plan on gender-based violence and femicide.
Mm.
Now, what this national strategic plan is supposed to do is give us a roadmap for the next 10 years on proper actions that we can take around accountability and coordination, prevention, so social cohesion, justice, safety and protection, response care and support, economic power, research and information management in order for us to curb the scourge against gender-based violence.
Mm.
That plan is currently sitting unfunded. That plan is currently sitting at an implementation backlog. And so before we start having conversations that we can have potentially around root causes, et cetera, there is a plan. That plan is actionable. It has goals that it needs to meet in order for us to reach certain measures as to how we actually start making a deep impact around gender-based violence and femicide.
Sure.
Around the conversation of, for example, prevention and social cohesion. If we're already properly doing behavioral change programs at community levels that are fully funded and organizations that are implementing or properly resourced, we'd start seeing the conversations maturing at a community-based level. We'd start having the kind of understandings that you want to have as to, because by the way, gender-based violence doesn't look the same in Gauteng like it does in KZN, like it does in Northern Cape, etc. There's different elements in each province. There's different elements in each community.
Mm-hmm.
And the solutions for those communities come from those communities. For example, Northern Cape has a really high issue around abuse of alcohol in particular. You'll find that you have a lot of GBV incidences that are based around alcohol. You're not going to find the same instance, for example, in Limpopo. They have a completely different issue that they need to address.
Mm.
So if we don't actually use the measures that we've all agreed upon as government, as civil society, as women of this country, as religious leaders, as cultural leaders, if we don't deal with this plan that we came up with together and start implementing it and funding it and resourcing it and ensuring that it's been implemented correctly at community level, we're not going to get anywhere. We'll still be having this conversation in 10 years' time.
Sure. Mandisa, and I have to then ask you, because when we talk about unfunded and implementation backlog, and my conversation around it's been sitting there for more than 3 years, and it's strategic and gender-based and femicide, and we've used and so much input went into it, then underfunded and implementation backlog, and is it an element that I would ask, is it a police issue? Is it an issue of unimplemented from the police perspective, or where then do you put the blame when you look at the strategic plan? Where does it lie? Who is to blame? And before I even get to unfunded and implemented, you know, backlog, where does it sit at this particular moment? Is it with the SAPS?
No, the strategic plan doesn't sit with the SAPS. Currently, the strategic plan is sitting with the interministerial committee is currently our accountability body. There's an interministerial committee that's supposed to be headed by the Department of Women and that has other ministries in there, like social development, sure. You'll have health, you'll have justice, etc. And that committee is currently our coordinating structure as an interim measure whilst we wait for our GBV council to be legislated. Now, the GBV council is going to be responsible for coordinating the overall GBV response of the country, similar to how SENEC coordinates HIV/AIDS, right?
Right.
And so in the absence of that body and in the absence of this interministerial committee meeting regularly, we have been not getting reports. So, for example, yes, we have the three new bills that were enacted that ensure, for example, that things like cyber violence are now taken into consideration, issues around the registry of sexual offenders, protection orders are now being automated, all of those things. Those new bills are beautiful, etc. But how are we tracking the implementation? What are we doing? And so there has now been an idea to have a second gender summit that's going to be taking place in November this year, where we're going to be having these conversations and asking these hard questions and asking the money questions. Where is the money sitting? What has been used? $26 billion has allocated. How did it get allocated? Where did it go? Asking exactly where the deficits are in the system, how we can, you know, where the blocks are, how can we release them? How can we ensure, for example, that we amplify, that we accelerate, and that there's accountability around the actions that we promised? Because we can't constantly be having this conversation and then not knowing where it is. And right now, to be honest, we don't know where it is. And we have a platform where we are going to be asking those questions. It's going to be televised. The South African public is going to get to participate in this process. And we're really going to hold everybody who are actors in this accountable around where are we at as with gender-based violence and femicide in the country.
Mandisa, you're much more informed about the process than I ever would be. When you do ask these questions, and you gave an astronomical number when you said funding for the first phase at least, or for the project at least, and now people are talking about a second gender-based initiative that needs to happen. You said, was it 26 billion? What was the number you mentioned? Funding?
There was supposed to be 26 billion allocated to different government departments, sure, to work around gender-based violence and femicide. So, for example, that should have been utilized by SAPS to ensure that their victim support centers are resourced, to ensure, for example, that their police are gender-sensitive, trained, etc.
So spread just across different departments.
Yeah, so justice are supposed to use it for sexual offences, courts, etc., assist in resourcing to Tuzela care centres, etc., etc. Social development are supposed to use it for response and care, things like domestic, sure, violence shelters, etc., etc.
Here's the question then.
So we need to know where that money is.
So
we need to know who used it, how it was used, was any of that money brought back, was any of that money missed? We need to have those answers to that question, and that's why this platform was created, primarily for accountability.
So
if there are blockages, for us to ensure that those blockages are released.
So obviously you have more insight and you have more access. So when you do ask those questions within, what are the kind of answers then you do get? Because obviously you participating in those structures, and there is some form of movement around conversations whereby, you know, even a conversation now, like I said, into a second initiative that's now being talked about, because the first might just not have materialized because of all sorts of things. When you ask the questions then of the kind of what happened to the money, what happened to the initiative, what happened to the plan, what is the answer you're getting?
Again, we're still going to sit in a platform where we get those answers because we haven't received them. The platforms in which we are asking these questions aren't platforms of accountability, where I can call a minister and say, Minister Pegitelli, what was your budget allocation and where have you used it? Those platforms haven't been created. We have created one that is going to be taking place in November this year, where those questions will need to be answered. Mm. But at the moment, there's going to be a process whereby there are provincial summits first, where those questions are asked to the premiers, to the MECs, to the districts, to the mayors, to say, what has been your budget allocation and what have you done? And then that's going to feed into a national process where the questions are asked at a national level to say to the national departments, we've gone to the districts, we've gone to the provinces, we now need to find out from you, where are the budget allocations, what has been done? So we can come up with comprehensive solutions that aren't just coming from a pie in the sky, but are saying, okay, for example, in Munga, we have an issue, this is where the budgets were supposed to go, it was mismanaged, who do we hold into account, who needs to be jailed, etc., etc. That is why we are having this process.
Sure. Have you got to a point, and I'm still with you, Mandisa, have you got to a point where you might be asking, and I'm asking the question here in my head, whereby, you know, monies might not have been allocated? Yes, you know, and we have various talk shops, and, you know, we're really good at that. And so here's a scenario where we would have had another talk shop and things would have been, you know, dealt with and promises would have been made. And I put it to you then that one of the scenarios is that money might just never have been allocated.
And I think that's a really important thing for us to find out and to know in a concrete way and to have a mechanism in which you then hold people to accountable for not allocating money.
Mm.
Right now, things are just sitting in the sky and we kind of can't pin anything down and say, okay, this is the department that we're holding accountable because they failed.
Because a lot of hope has also been created.
You see my point. So
yes,
it's important that we have this process and we kind of audit ourselves, even us as civil society organizations that have been given funding around GBV response. What have we done? Which communities have we reached out to? Have we utilized those fundings accordingly, etc.? Everybody needs to be held into account for their contribution and how far they've come.
Sure. Macy, what is civil society's role in a conversation around rape? And it's a broad question, but I want to ask, because what begins to happen is the conversations begin to come from specific quarters and agencies begin to talk about it, and, you know, NGOs begin to talk about it, and people who are, you know, have taken on the cause talk about it. What is civil society's role? If people are just listening out there and listening to the conversations and having understanding of what rape is and the scourge, for example. And I want to use this particular example. Earlier on today, an individual called into the show, and he called in about 3 weeks ago, and he said his 12-year-old daughter had just been raped the week earlier. And they were struggling with the police to have a case open. They've opened the case, but the perpetrator or the alleged perpetrator is walking around every day there, and they trying hard with themselves to try and concretize this thing and particularly also get to a space where I don't want to say get over it or get past it, but to a space where they begin to deal with it as well and don't need to deal with the logistics of every day of just having to open the case and having to deal with a policeman who might not be wanting or not have the urgency to deal with his case, where they just want to, and when I say move on, I mean move on to a place of reconciliation where they can begin to think of coping with it or dealing with it within a family context. They never will, but, you know, they need to get to a comfort area. What is the role of civil society when you see that, you know, the instruments of government are not on board? You've just heard Mandisa talking about, a process of parliament that 3 years later might not actually have the funding, and or if the funding is not there, answers are not even known. Where does that leave Joe Soap or you know, anybody else who just wants to take up the issue? I mean, is civil society relatively powerless, or where do they begin to engage in these conversations?
You know, the question that Mandisa has just raised, especially in terms of funding and resources, it's a major challenge. We've got a lot of NGOs, those are taking part in terms of ensuring they fight with us in terms of gender-based violence. People are getting informed, people are getting educated, but it goes back to the justice system. Okay, there are police who are working tirelessly to assist the community, because we say working together we can achieve more. Hence, we've got the structures like SANAC, where civil society are gathered together to ensure that they meet or they ensure that a strategic plan is being implemented. So there are police who are working tirelessly, respecting their oath of work, but there are those who take rape as a minor thing. That is where, at the end of the day, the people, they started to lose faith and hope in the police. I would like to give an example where I say there's a girl of 6 years who was raped by a neighbor. But A 6-year-old who was raped by a 39-year-old old neighbor. And when you take and investigate the case, because I'm also part of the brigades of Tshwane, where we were being led by MEC Faith Mazibuko. I'm working directly with them. So if you do investigation, you'll find that there's a full play that has happened there because of the parents. The parents are failing to take responsibility. So at the end of the day, the kids are the ones who are suffering, you understand? Mm. So Health Mandis has indicated that we have an NSP whereby it needs to be implemented. It can't be implemented without resources. Mm. That's a fact. Sure. And now she has indicated, and I think this is a challenge that Mandis has been raising all along, that where are the funds? Where are the funds?
Do they even exist?
It can be there. It can be utilized in a good way. And going back to SAPS, they arrest the perpetrator. I'm talking about those who respect their oath of work. Mm. They arrest the perpetrator. They arrest the perpetrator. Then the perpetrator is been arrested and sent to justice system. Justice system, I'm talking about court.
Mm.
That's where our rights have been violated. There is that say that says innocent until proven guilty. Mm. A person has killed, a person has raped, but because a person has got rights, after 2 days a person is out, they say is entitled for bail. There's an example again. There's a person who was brutally killed, who was a gay, Simon Bata.
Mm.
He was killed brutally inside the boot of his car. But as I speak now, the perpetrators are working freely. I'm working freely on the street with a 500 rand bail. The last one, walked free with a free bail. They say he'll be under observation. But what about the family, family of the victims?
Sure.
So the justice system of South Africa, it's failing us. It's failing us tremendously.
Sure.
And I don't know what to say to them.
Macy, let's go to the lines, Macy. Yeah. Continue, Macy.
That is why, at the end of the day, our community, they are losing hope. Even if a kid can be raped, they won't report that to the police unless you go and do investigations after hearing the hearsays.
Mm. Let's go to the lines. I want to go to Mogale in Mogale City. Yes. Mogale?
Good evening, my friend, and two ladies there.
Sure.
How are you?
They can hear you also, Mogale, and they can participate. They on the line.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very heavy. But let me start anyway with the issue of rape. Rape being sex, in fact, it's involving sex by force. So I really fail because my other ladies there said the problem with this man when they're angry, why do they resort to rape? Even myself as a man, I can't understand, because sex to be start with, it must be the union of body, the union of mind, the union of spirit. These three things. If a person can say no, it's no. Then another one, it doesn't say no, it just say according to my culture, according to my belief, Christian religion, whatsoever, is seen today, we'll do it when. So the man usually force and whatnot. So if those things are not there, then it becomes rape. But going straight forward, the lady just spoken a very important issue now, that now there are some money somewhere, they are waiting, but rape is not waiting, it's continuing. So what I put on the table is the immediate solution now, immediately, those ladies are there, they can hear the rape cases, and I'm happy they're working with Faith Mazibuko. I know her. That lady doesn't take nonsense in rape or domestic violence. Straightforward. She's very much strict on that one. So the problem with the conviction of the rape criminals is based on investigation, especially step number one, reporting. It must be reported properly. And if it's not reported properly, that victim will not succeed in convincing the magistrate, because as the lady is saying, the justice system is failing us. Indeed, it's failing, but it's not really their intention to fail the community. They are bound by the Constitution on three things. One, the Constitution says the people who are reporting, even the prosecutor, must prove beyond reasonable doubt that this person is guilty. Immediately there is a small doubt, then the magistrate will give a lenient sentence or will give a bail or what. If he doesn't do so, our rule says that criminal have got a right to go and appeal. The appeal court somewhere in Bloemfontein can turn that judgment down and let that person lose again. So it creates a big conflict. So the best way is not to look at the watch and rush, but to start at the first level to get all information properly. And I'm happy because in our court now, we have got the probation officers who sit down and check, and the social workers.
Sure.
Sometimes they can even do this thing, what you call it, a children's court.
Sure. Mogale, I have to leave it there. Mandisa, because I have to close the conversation and I've got 8 minutes left. Mandisa, if you want to comment, Mandisa, let's comment on what Mogale has been saying.
Look, he is right that all elements of the criminal justice system need to be functional and working in order to see successful prosecution, and that's not what we're seeing at the moment. So from the fact that there are people that are sitting with their rape kits that haven't been tested for DNA for like 4 or 5 years is a problem. That creates an access to justice issue. The fact that dockets go missing, the fact that there isn't proper investigation of cases, that they take too long in order to be able to take witness statements, and then people's memories start to obviously erode over time is an issue. The fact that from the time period, from the time that you enter the police station to open a rape case to the time that you see the inside of a courtroom can take years. And what does that mean for you seeking justice? What does that mean for bail? All of those issues. And so the fact that the system isn't really currently effective, we need to start looking at alternative forms of justice. And we also need to start looking at alternative forms of rehabilitation. I'm a strong proponent of believing that we need to rehabilitate people and try to heal people so that they can reintegrate into society, because our criminal justice system, when it comes to prosecuting and putting people in correctional services, is not working. I'll give you an example just of domestic violence in particular. If we had the actual perpetrator going into a shelter instead of the victim, and we had that person being given mandatory psychosocial support, mandatory anger management training, and given tools on how to be able to handle their issues, we would have more people that have the skill set to self-regulate and not end up perpetuating violent acts, versus just spitting people back out into the system so that they can go and violate someone else.
Mandisa, Mandisa, on that particular point, alternative forms of justice and of alternative forms of rehabilitation, and you talking about those specifics, what do you say to the family of let's, for example, just to use Foster. What do you say to Foster, whose 12-year-old was raped and he does not absolutely see, you know, any scenario for alternative forms of justice and re-education of that particular, you know, criminal mind, and he would obviously see rehabilitation part of it, but he'd want to see a particular jail sentence first before rehabilitation. What do you say to the actual family?
Of course we would like to see punishments. Of course we'd like to see incarceration. But those are not the realities of the situation that we live in. Most perpetrators do not see the inside of prison cells. And then they end up re-victimizing or hurting other people within communities. So in the absence of us having enough jails, because we don't have enough jails,
to actually put all of these. Let me just give you numbers so that we're on the same page. Just on sexual violence acts alone, we average 45,000 in this country per annum. The entire prison population of this country is less than 180,000 people. That's men, women, everyone, from murder to fraud to sexual violence to everything that you could possibly do in that would land you in prison. The entire prison population is less than 200,000 people. And we average on sexual offenses alone 45,000 a year. So if you jailed all of those people for the past 3 to 4 years, you would literally not have prison cells. So that can't be our only option. Especially when you have a criminal justice system that doesn't give you successful prosecution. You need to give communities alternatives to mob justice because that's where we're headed.
Because
as painful as it is to deal with that reality.
Because that's what one individual called after Foster had put his case to us this evening. One individual called in and said, if that was my daughter, I would have taken him out.
Which is understandable. Which is understandable how citizens can feel that way when you've got a failed criminal justice system.
Sure.
So with us not having alternative forms of justice, without us having alternative forms of rehabilitating perpetrators, we are going to start perpetuating criminal acts against these perpetrators as well, and we become an even more violent society.
Absolutely. Macy, do you want to close the show for us, Macy, in 2 minutes?
Yeah, in 2 minutes. I agree with Mandis and everything that she has said.
Sure.
But my concern is we've been having a lot of talk shows, we've been having a lot of dialogues, we've been having a lot of march. I still remember while we were marching to Sandton, where we say we shut down Sandton because of GBV. But there's no action. And my plea is to government sectors, those who are sitting there on top with funds, they must come down and make sure that They make organizations to access those funds so that implementation can be there.
Mandisa and Macy, thank you so much for coming on board tonight and having a conversation with us here on Power 98.7.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.